together. Invest in remarkable Indonesia.
He may be the most influential man in San Francisco. Mark Benioff, founder of Salesforce, has transformed the way businesses do business. He's pioneered the flight to the cloud and a new model for philanthropy along the way. He launched his career at Apple under Steve Jobs, became a star salesman at Oracle under Larry Ellison, then went on to start what's now one of Oracle's biggest competitors. Joining me today on this special edition of Studio 1.0 from Dreamforce 2014, Salesforce CEO and Chairman Mark Benioff.
Always great to be with you.
So great to be here at Dreamforce, the largest software conference in the world. How many people are here today?
We have more than 145,000 registered to attend physically, and there's more than 5 million who are going to attend online. In fact, 3 million have already attended online, so it could be even bigger than that.
Now, I'll never forget the first time I saw your Dreamforce keynote. It was like seeing Moses part the Red Sea. You are a force up there. How much practice goes into that?
This year, I have not been on tour, so it was a brand new show, and so I actually had to practice it quite a bit.
You announced Wave, a cloud-based analytics platform. What does this give your customers that they didn't have before?
Analytics is just a category that's just rich for innovation. A lot of companies in our industry have kind of sat on their kind of kingdoms too long and kind of kept the status quo going. There's a long list of those companies and a long list of those CEOs, and one of those areas is analytics. It's a completely new way to think about analytics and mobile visualization, and it's really analytics for the rest of us.
There are myths about the greatest founders that are boiled down into legend. What is the myth of Mark Benioff, and what is the reality?
The reality is getting to this point in your career is a lot of hard work over a long period of time. The fundamental reality of our industry is that people are always overestimating what you can do in a year, and they underestimate what you can do in a decade. And in our industry, if you work hard and focused and have a clear vision, you can have a phenomenal outcome. And that's what we're doing here at Salesforce.
You started your first company when you were 15.
I did.
Then you went to Apple. You worked under Steve Jobs.
I did.
What was the single most important thing you learned from him?
Passion. Steve Jobs was one of the greatest, most passionate people I ever met. And I still remember in 1984, I was programming assembly language, which is kind of the language at the core of the microprocessor down at Apple headquarters, and we were writing the first software that did assembly language on the Macintosh. Well, Steve Jobs came storming down the halls, motivating the developers. His energy was infectious, and everybody wanted to work as hard as they could because he was there and he was working so hard. And I learned that. I learned that you have to be all in, and that's something I try to bring to Salesforce too.
How confident are you in the future of Apple under Tim Cook?
I think that Tim is doing a great job. We've seen some great new products this month with the new iPhones. I have one in my pocket right now. I have a 6 Plus I'm really enjoying. And Apple's a great company. I mean, I think it's the greatest story in American business. And look, Steve was the greatest of the greatest. We all know that. And so being the follow-on is going to be tough no matter what. I think just that point makes Tim a success.
Steve Jobs and Larry Ellison were great personal friends, but I wonder, how were they different as bosses?
Oh, both are actually phenomenal visionaries. You know, both are able to really have a feeling for where the industry is going and work hard with their teams to create that reality. I think that where they're a little bit different is, Larry was maybe a little bit more of a kind of a suit and tie kind of person. Steve was always in his jeans and black turtleneck, and their aesthetics were a little different. Their styles were remarkably the same. You know, I think that's why they got along so well together.
In what way?
Well, it gets back to that passion. Mm. You know, they were very passionate, dedicated, focused people. And the number one issue for both of them, their business. Nothing was more important to Steve than Apple. Nothing is more important to Larry than Oracle. There's a message in that. If you want to put everything above everything else, you're going to achieve that. Whatever you focus on, you're going to get. And for both of those executives, the number one thing in their life was their work. We all know Larry Ellison is a force of nature. And what Larry Ellison wants, Larry Ellison is going to get.
grocery store, they don't come up to you and say, hey, I'd like to go out on a date. But on our time, they do.
It was really nice to be on a site where gentlemen are actually looking for someone of my age.
And then they match you up with somebody that has the same likes and the same values.
I feel like I'm back in high school.
I got my first flirt within about 10 minutes of being on the site. Yeah.
OurTime.com. Visit today and get started for free.
Ally Bank really has no hidden fees on savings accounts.
That's right.
It's just that I'm worried about, you know, hidden things.
Okay, why's that?
No hidden fees from the bank where no branches equals great rates.
Today's Bloomberg Ticker is brought to you by Invesco. Explore intentional investing with Invesco. Start with your financial advisor.
Do you own a home or a condo? Then it's time you learn about American Residential Warranty.
Hi, I'm Anthony Sullivan.
And I'm Michelle Edmonds.
And we're here with important information for every homeowner.
Did you know home appliance and major system breakdowns cost homeowners an average of $1,700 per year in repairs and replacements?
American Residential Warranty can help cover those costs with home service plans starting at less than a dollar a day.
For most covered repairs, you simply pay a small service fee and American Residential Warranty will take care of the rest.
Including parts and labor.
American Residential Warranty replaced my dishwasher with a brand new one, and I only paid a small service fee.
I woke up on a Saturday morning, and there was no hot water in the shower. So I called American Residential Warranty. They sent a repairman to fix the problem the same day.
Plan options include coverage for central air, heat, and ductwork.
Interior electrical systems and plumbing.
Major kitchen appliances.
Water heaters.
Washers and dryers.
Garage door openers.
Ceiling fans and more.
Even pools and spas.
American Residential Warranty gives you security and peace of mind with plans starting at less than $1 per day. And you get a 30-day money-back guarantee on any plan.
Call now or go to GetAHomePlan.com to learn how you can get 2 free months.
And for a limited time, you can get a home security system valued at $850 free with any plan.
You can call American Residential Warranty 24 hours a day.
Their customer service is incredible. When my air conditioning was broken, they came out and my AC was fixed the same day I called.
You can save money with a home service plan from American Residential Warranty.
Call now. There's no obligation. But hurry, if you wait until you need a home service repair,
it'll be too late.
Call 1-800-274-6654 to find out which home warranty plan is right for you. That's 1-800-274-6654. Call now.
When Larry Ellison stepped down as CEO, you tweeted, there has been and always will be one CEO at Oracle. What do you mean by that? How optimistic are you about Mark Hurd and Safra Catz being co-CEOs?
Well, I'm sure Mark and Safra will continue to do a good job just like they have over the last 2 years. But we all know Larry Ellison is a force of nature. And what Larry Ellison wants, Larry Ellison is going to get. So whoever is the CEO is going to have to bend to Larry's desires.
All right. Now, Larry gave you money to start Salesforce.
He did. He was our first investor.
And Salesforce has now become the main competition.
That might be true.
So what did Salesforce do right over the years that Oracle has done wrong?
Well, we really got singularly focused on a vision of the cloud. It's a lot like what Google or Yahoo do, that you can log on to a website. But instead of delivering books or delivering search results or something like that, well, we're delivering business functionality. And we've stayed very focused and dedicated to that idea for 15 years. And because of that singular focus, we've been able to achieve a great success. And there's a message in that around business, which is you have to be dedicated.
And is there another message that Oracle missed the cloud?
Well, Oracle has a different business. And on my way out of Oracle, Jeff Henley, who just retired as the chairman and who was the CFO at the time, took me into his office and said, Mark, you know, it's a good thing you're leaving Oracle. And I said, whoa, Jeff, why is that? He goes, well, you know, it's going to be hard for us to do a brand new technology model and a brand new business model, because everything from the way you deliver the software to the way you recognize the revenue is completely different in cloud computing.
You and Larry Ellison have had a rivalry over the years and more recently a partnership. What's your relationship really like behind the scenes?
Our relationship, Larry and I have a great relationship. I just saw him on Sunday night. We're, you know, it's we're always hugging and kissing.
Frenemies?
Frenemies. We've been, you know, friends for 30 years, and so that's been very exciting. And look, I don't think, you know, I've had some great mentors in my life, people, you know, who I've been thrilled to have, of course, you know, my parents, my grandparents, but also I've had, like you mentioned, Steve Jobs, Colin Powell, dramatically influenced me in philanthropy and in business. I don't think anyone has influenced me more than Larry Ellison, and I would not be the CEO that I am today. Salesforce would not be the company that it is, not just because of his money, but because of everything that he continues to teach me and that I learn from him.
So big tech companies are splitting up from HP to eBay. Why is that happening, and are we going to see more of it?
Well, I think that there's a lot of different reasons why that is happening. One might be that these companies are just too big. They become so big that they become much unmanageable, and you want to get them to be smaller units. Smaller units are easier to manage. And so in an organization like HP, you know, it's Solomon's baby, and they're going to, you know, they're going to have a one for each. And that's going to be a great strategy for them with two CEOs. I think the same thing is a great strategy for eBay. There's probably a lot of other companies that are going to follow this.
Will Oracle follow? Is Oracle one of those companies?
I think with Oracle, it's hard to do, number one, because the distribution organization is going to be the same no matter what. The most important thing is Oracle's got to innovate at a higher rate. That's what we just have not seen Oracle do in the last decade.
Salesforce has been a big acquirer. How do you continue to buy companies without losing focus, without getting bloated?
Well, number one, acquisitions are hard no matter who you are. And I can tell you firsthand, after doing 25 acquisitions over the last 5 years, acquisitions are hard. But you can transform your company through acquisitions. And the other thing that acquisitions do is they bring all these incredible people into your company. And if you can nurture those people, well, then you can end up with a phenomenal result.
So what do you do from within to overcome the hard part and the challenges when you buy another big company?
The number one thing you've got to do is you've got to be, as the CEO, you've got to choose which one you're going to be in, because it's going to dramatically increase the success of it. I only have so much time.
Right.
So where I spend my time is super important. And I kind of divide my time into four quadrants. And in a certain quadrant, which is my transformation quadrant, that's where I spend the majority of my time. The things that I know that if I don't do them, they're not going to get done. There's going to be other things around operating the business, or maybe nurturing things that are coming 2 to 5 years from now, or maybe things around the efficiency of the business that I don't have to be as involved in. Of course, I still have to be involved at some level, but those transformational things, I have to pick and choose carefully, and then I can really deliver a great result.
We hear a lot about Google investing in moonshots, internal products and technologies, the self-driving car, Google Glass. How much time and how many resources do you devote to innovating from within?
For us, innovating within is what it's all about. And when I sit there with our teams, we're really kind of figuring out, and I think Wave is a great example. We wanted to do three things. We wanted to, number one, build a product that would be for everyone in the company, not just analysts, which had never been done in analytics. Mm-hmm. Number two, that it would run great on these mobile devices. And it's built for this product and this platform. And that is really important to us. And then the third thing is, behind us is a lot of developers and a lot of software CEOs, and they want to build on that platform and build their own companies. And so we built a platform as well. And so by doing great, great, great kind of democratization, you know, great consumerization, and then great platform, we're delivering a whole new type of product.
What's Salesforce's strategy to get into China, one of the most crucial markets of the future?
Well, China is a super important market. It's very exciting, and we work closely with our customers there. We also have to work very closely with the government. We have to work with our partners, and all of those things come together to help create something in China.
Now, the NSA revelations, I wonder how those specifically have impacted your business, because you're dealing with so much sensitive data. You've built data centers in Germany, France, the UK. Will you have to have one in every important country?
Oh, yeah, you're going to have one in every important country, but it's not because of that, it's another reason. Because the cloud is going mainstream, every president of every country wants to have their own cloud. I was just in Germany, I was with Angela Merkel, she wants the German cloud. I was with Francois Hollande in France, he wants the French cloud. Abe wants the Japan cloud, you know. Cameron wants the UK cloud. And
you know
what?
You're the cloud maker.
They should have one. They should have their own clouds. I'm all for that. And for every important country in the world, they'll have their own cloud. They'll all interoperate if that's what they want as well, or they can just have their own local version. It's whatever they want.
So how does that work?
That's my job.
How does that work from a security and privacy perspective?
Well, from a security and privacy perspective, you know, we are, you know, using what are the best practices in the industry. But I'm going to tell you something that you already know, and you, every viewer will know, there is no finish line when it comes to security. Mm-hmm. We are in a very dynamic and difficult situation in cybersecurity, and it doesn't matter what company you are, what executive you are, if you take any position except for that this is a tough environment, you're going to have challenges. So, you know, we take it super seriously, and we're super cautious. And it's going to be a complex environment going forward.
We've spoken about your mentors. How does Mark Benioff want to be remembered?
Trade stocks and options online, we'd like to have a word with you. Trade King. We're different from the five biggest online brokers. Trade King lets you trade wisely, just $4.95 per trade. Trade smoothly, with customer service ranked number one by Smart Money. Trade easily, with an award-winning website that's easy to use. Switch today and get $1,000 in free trade commissions. Looking for a new breed of broker? There's a name for people like you. Trade King. Switch today.
So I was a head chef at 24. I won best new restaurant in the country at 31. I've published cookbooks. I've been on TV. I've relied on people every step of the way. I still do. I have to. So staying connected to those people, that's what makes me feel accomplished. They're people I connect with, that I'd sit at a table with. These are the people that I ride with every day.
In my 60s. I've got a nice long life ahead. Big plans. So when I found out Medicare doesn't pay all my medical expenses, I got a Medicare supplement insurance plan.
If you're eligible for Medicare, you may know it only covers about 80% of your Part B medical expenses. The rest is up to you. Call now and find out about an AARP Medicare supplement insurance plan insured by United Healthcare Insurance Company. Like all standardized Medicare supplement insurance plans, it could save you in out-of-pocket medical costs. Call now to request your free decision guide.
I've been with my doctor for 12 years. Now I know I'll be able to stick with them.
You'll be able to visit any doctor or hospital that accepts Medicare patients. Plus, there are no networks and virtually no referrals needed. See why millions of people have already enrolled in the only Medicare supplement insurance plans endorsed by AARP. Don't wait. Call now.
You have sold tens of millions of shares in the last year. Why?
Well, I've sold a lot of stock over the last 10 years, and I've diversified out of percentage of my stock. But still, I have a very large position in Salesforce. I am either the largest shareholder or one of the very largest shareholders.
So no shareholder should be worried about your confidence in your own company.
As one of the largest shareholders, I've never been more excited about Salesforce.
You created the 1-1-1 model, giving 1% of time, equity, and profits to philanthropy. Why is this the best way for companies to give back?
on day one, we put 1% of our equity, 1% of our profit, and 1% of all of our employees' time into a 501c3 public charity. It was very easy at the time because we had no stock, we had no employees, we had no products. Very easy decision. Now, though, it's paid out. We've, you know, delivered more than 680,000 hours of community service, over $70 million in grants to nonprofits all over the world, including big grants here locally to our public schools and our public hospitals. And this is what I'm most excited about, more than 23,000 nonprofits and NGOs use Salesforce for free. And that's a huge part of our philanthropic focus.
You're San Francisco born and raised. I wonder, obviously the business is so important to you, but why is giving back so important to you?
Because I knew that I would never have real joy and happiness and fulfillment in my life without giving. I had already been through a pretty awesome ride, if you will, at Oracle. 13 years being with Oracle from $50 million in revenue when I joined in 1986 to when I left in 1999, about the size that Oracle is now. I had already seen that trajectory. But what I recognized is that just building a product and just selling that product to a customer is not going to make you happy and fulfilled as an executive. I had seen that across the board. And what I did see, though, is if we could somehow tie and integrate philanthropy into our business, we were going to have not just a great financial result and technical result. I was maybe too confident, you know, in my own ability as a technical leader, but I wanted to have fulfillment, too, and joy in my life, and I knew that I would have to do something philanthropic to achieve that.
The venture capitalist Chamath Palihapitiya criticized your philanthropy efforts as marketing. How do you respond to that? I believe you saw that when that happened.
Well, I think it's just amazing to me, you know, that anybody could say that, because we are so dedicated for a decade and a half to helping other people, and we are so through and through that this is what we are about and what we want to leave behind. At the end of the day, I'm not sure people will ever remember Salesforce. Maybe they won't even remember cloud computing. But I know that they're going to remember all the work that we did in the world while we were a successful business and all the things that we did to give back. And that's what's really important to me.
Inequality protests have broken out right here in San Francisco. Google buses have been attacked. You've become kind of the social conscience of the tech industry, and you've said the tech community has to do more. How satisfied are you with their response?
Well, I am kind of a protester and activist in the technology industry seeking change, so I feel very aligned with these protesters. And I'll tell you what's exciting for me is that it gives me a vehicle to say to companies, give, do more. That if you want to somehow quell these voices, show them that you're not just extracting value from society, but that you're giving value back. You know, our corporate leaders are phenomenal leaders. If they can partner with the mayors, the superintendents, we can do a lot of good. And the more that we can make that happen, the more result we're going to get. And we've seen that in San Francisco, and we're going to prove that out.
But you have been disappointed, haven't you, in terms of the response of some of these companies? I mean, I guess I wonder, why aren't we seeing...
I could give you some examples. Look, I can give you great examples where I'll say to someone, hey, we should do more, and I can see them fully give and go all in. And then I, you know, a very famous CEO with a hot technology company, I'm not going to call him out on your show, talking to him, hey, you know, don't you want to give back? And he wrote me an email and he said, well, what have I been given? And I said, what do you mean? Well, what have I been given? I created all this. I did this. I made this happen. And I was like, you know, I am taken aback by that, honestly, where it's like, okay, well, it's a point of view. And the reality is, look, we're all working together to make this a better place. And if we don't work together, it's not going to happen. And taking that position isn't going to get anyone anywhere.
You're also very active politically. You've hosted multiple fundraisers for President Obama. How satisfied are you with his presidency?
Well, number one, I'm not a Democrat and I'm not a Republican. I actually give money to a lot of different politicians, including the president and also some of his competitors in the race for the presidency. I'm an American, and I want to advocate for my causes that are important to me, and things like those kind of programs give me the opportunity to get access to them and make my case on why we should do things like philanthropy why we should increase cybersecurity.
How closely are you keeping your eye on the startup community and what could become the next Salesforce, your next big nemesis?
I spend a lot of time with startups and entrepreneurs. I love startups and entrepreneurs because I think a startup and an entrepreneur. We're just a $5 billion a year startup with 15,000 employees. And I love spending time with them. I only get a limited amount of time. But I will, you know, in my next life, whatever that is, I'd like to spend more time helping entrepreneurs.
What's next for Mark Benioff?
Well, one thing is going to be a lot more philanthropy, a lot more giving. We've built these two great children's hospitals now with Oakland and San Francisco. And then I'd love to spend more time with entrepreneurs as well. Both of those things are highly constrained because I have a day job,
right,
which is running Salesforce. And I really love that. I love my job. I love our industry. I love making all these people behind me happy. That's why they come to Dreamforce.
We've spoken about your mentors. How does Mark Benioff want to be remembered?
Well, I hope that as I mentioned, if I leave anything behind, it's not just cloud computing or CRM or the democratization of enterprise software, but that it's, you know, that the true joy in life comes through giving, and that you can be in business, you can be the CEO, you can have a great company, and that can be one of the greatest vehicles for giving that you'll ever have. So use that platform to give back, and you're going to be not just have great success, but you'll even be happier than you'll even be successful.
Mark Benioff, thank you so much for joining us. This has really been a phenomenal opportunity.
Thanks for coming to Dreamforce,
thank
and
you.
I hope you come back next year.
I will be back for sure.
Do you get the financial advice you truly need?
We're facing major college costs.
I saved the money. Now I need to make it work.
Getting the financial advice you need shouldn't depend on who you are or where you are in life. At Edelman Financial, we believe everyone deserves great financial advice, even if you're not rich.
You've seen Rick on TV, heard him on the radio, and read his best-selling books. Now put Edelman Financial to work for you. Go online to learn more or call us now.
The first thing we'll do is talk. Actually, you'll do the talking. We'll listen. Next, we make a plan for you, and then you can relax, knowing we're always here for you. Call now for your free portfolio review.
I want smart advice in plain English.
I want a plan to help me get where I want to go.
That's why I'm going to Edelman Financial.
Edelman Financial, because everyone deserves great financial advice. Call 1-800-691-5413.
It's the Buick.
Sir. Buick, 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 Buick. Where's the Buick? Buick. Buick.
The expectation-shattering Buick LaCrosse.
Hey! Now during the Buick Model Year Closeout, pay no interest for 5 years, plus get $2,500 purchase bonus cash on the 2014 Buick LaCrosse. Hurry in for the best selection.
So I was a head chef at 24. I won Best New Restaurant in the Country at 31. I've published cookbooks. I've been on TV. I've relied on people every step of the way. I still do. I have to. So staying connected to those people, that's what makes me feel accomplished. They're people I connect with, that I'd sit at a table with. These are the people that I ride with every day.
I am so glad that Jen set us up.
Yeah.
So how do you guys know each other?
Jen and I went to summer camp together.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. You know, I never lost from Maccabi.
Oh, whoa.
I know,
watch
right?
Watch out. What's Maccabi?
Oh, man. I am tired.
You know, I never lost at Maccabi.
Color Wars?
You know what that is?
Yeah, we call it Maccabi, too.
Do you want to go out and grab a drink?
Yes. Do you want to meet my parents?
Yeah, girl. You know, I've been thinking about us. And, I just can't fight it anymore. It's bundle time. Feel those savings, baby.
And that's
how a home and auto bundle is made. Better he learns it here than on the streets.
The miracle of bundling. Now that's progressive.
Welcome to Money Clip, where we tie together the best stories, interviews, and video in business news. I am Adam Johnson, and we are following the markets today. There are also plenty of other stories, but here's a rundown. Congress wants to know what is happening on the Ebola front. Many others want to know who's actually in charge. And now that the global markets are selling off all over the place, should the Fed keep QE sugar going? The head of the St. Louis Fed says yes. Investors like what he has to say. In company, meanwhile, Netflix thinks, yes, higher prices and HBO will make viewers sign up elsewhere. Meanwhile, around the world, talk about elsewhere, clouds over Europe. Nobel laureate Paul Krugman says the situation is, quote, scary. And finally, in tech, the financial services sector is freaking out over Apple Pay. And that, by the way, is a direct quote from one Mark Andreessen. All right, first, we're going to take a look at the top stories. Here they are. Stocks, not the only thing falling today. Oil drops below $80 a barrel. West Texas Intermediate crude hit its lowest price since June of 2012. That's after a government report showed that U.S. crude inventories expanded last week, contributing to a global oil surplus. And Goldman Sachs beats earning estimates in the third quarter. Net income rising 48% as the firm set aside a smaller portion of revenue to actually pay employees.
It was a combination of better revenues than expected due to trading being stronger than expected and a lower comp ratio, and that's why they beat on the bottom line. But it's a strong report. I mean, this is one of the few banks that's still earning its above its cost of capital, and that's allowed them to raise the dividend.
Yeah, that's a key point. Raise that dividend more than expected earlier this morning. Goldman CEO Lloyd Blankfein has been limiting expenses to keep the firm's return on equity above 10%. And Nestle on high alert because of the Ebola crisis. Cocoa futures up 16% in the past month. And if the disease spreads to Ivory Coast, which is the world's largest producer of cocoa, prices could obviously rise further. Nestle's CEO is also concerned about the human tragedy.
First thing, it's people. Our focus goes to our people and all that. That's the most important thing. And I think we are part of society. This is a major problem for society at large. But I don't want to extend to that there. But that's priority.
And Nestle says that pulling employees out of the region is not necessary. Closing factories in Africa would only cause a panic. And Warren Buffett, his Berkshire Hathaway, has cut its stake in Tesco to less than 3%. That's after Buffett said his 8-year investment in the troubled food retailer was a, quote, huge mistake. Tesco shares have plunged about 50% this year. Okay, now let's focus on what everybody's talking about. Markets, right? Stock prices falling around the world. Bond yields falling too. Oil, yes, you guessed it, also down. Let's get a little perspective from the pros here on Bloomberg.
The basics in the United States are really quite positive.
Anyone who has a little bit of a stomach for some short-run volatility is going to come out ahead in the next 6 to 12 months.
This recovery is clear. We're making progress in the U.S. I think if you want to be investing anywhere, it is in the U.S. because of the recovery. But that recovery is still a bit fragile.
With the exception of the U.S. and the U.K., the global economy is slowing. And therefore, no matter how hard it tries and no matter how fast it heals, the U.S. will face headwinds coming from abroad.
I happen to think that absent some spreading of this wild card factor concerning Ebola, and again, the fear, not the disease, I think the fundamentals are such that we'll move out of this.
We're going to get a good year in rally in November and December that is going to more than make up the 8 or 9% decline that we have so far.
I think the fundamentals, at least as far as the U.S. is concerned, will reassert themselves.
So, again, it's dangerous to predict, as we know, on the short run. But I do think we have a very good chance of hitting new highs by year end.
All right, so stay the course. Obviously, the Fed playing a very key role here. The central bank says it stands ready to end its bond buying program at the end of the month. But should that really be the case now that markets are obviously moving in the wrong direction?
We have to make sure that inflation expectations remain near our target. And for that reason, I think a reasonable response of the Fed in this situation would be to invoke the clause on the taper that said that the taper was data dependent, and we could go on pause on the taper at this juncture and wait until we see how the data shakes out into December.
In other words, continue with QE.
Continue with QE at a very low level as we have it right now, and then assess our options going forward.
And that moved the markets. Stocks climbed off their lows after Mr. Bullard made those comments right here on Bloomberg Television. That keeps investors happy that there is a chance, again, a chance that the sugar might still be there. But there are still big problems. Nobel Prize winning economist Paul Krugman, he does not like what he sees out there, and he expressed that to Charlie Rose yesterday.
Europe is actually seriously scary. China is, in fact, seriously scary, although it's harder to track, but it gets less press. But and we are not an island. I think international interdependence can be overstated, but you really would not expect the U.S. to be doing, to be completely immune to these bad developments, and we are not on that solid a basis here. So here we are, 6 years after Lehman fell, still very fragile.
We'll have more from Krugman, more from Bullard. That'll be later in the show. We're also calling on the expertise of David Harrow. He's Morningstar's fund manager of the decade. He's going to help us try to find some stocks to buy. I'm going to have that list right here on Insight in Action. You can also watch for it on Twitter. I will post it at AJ Insight. All right. So what will the Fed do when it meets later this month? We got the indications chair Yellen and crew will keep a very steady hand. And Ebola, obviously a big topic in Washington today. Top officials from the CDC, the NIH, look, anyone who's on the front lines of this thing, they're at a hearing right now on Capitol Hill. We'll bring you the very latest.
I can reach Ally Bank 24/7, but there are no branches.
24/7.
It's just I'm a little reluctant to try new things.
What's wrong with trying new things?
Feel that in your muscles?
I do.
Try a new way to bank, where no branches equals great rates.
Coke Industries started in the heartland, and we've expanded to nearly every state. Today, that's more than 60,000 American jobs. You may not always see our name on the products you use, but we help make better food, clothing, shelter, technologies, and other necessities. Here, we build on each other's ideas to create more opportunities for people everywhere. Together, we are Coke.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm on it. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
You're covered, Kevin.
Thanks, Melinda.
I have blah, blah insurance, so person, come help.
Hey, Grandma. Dad, look who it is.
I see who it is.
Six callers ahead of us, Jimmy.
You're not helping.
Having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm. There to help you anytime, anywhere, any way. That's getting to a better state.
Perceptions change and evolve. In a recent Bloomberg Audience Insights report, more and more IT decision makers evaluated Android as a secure platform for large-scale business operations. In the survey, 72% of IT decision makers said they had deployed an Android device as part of a bring-your-own-device initiative. Among them, more than 9 in 10 had deployed an Android device from Samsung. One reason they trust Samsung Android devices is the Knox security platform. 79% believe Knox is extremely or very useful for application security, with 78% mirroring that sentiment for malware protection. Samsung is in the unique position to offer security that is deeply rooted in hardware and constantly moves forward to help business realize the full potential of mobility.
What does Silicon Valley get that other industries don't yet?
Bloomberg's Emily Chang sits down with the biggest influencers in technology and media.
Honestly, in the beginning, we were not trying to make money.
It was all an experiment. You think that you may live to 120.
I certainly hope to, yes. I'm a little paranoid of not being needed and wanted, I guess.
For candid conversations about how they made it and where they're going next, Studio 1.0, Thursdays at 8:30 on Bloomberg Television.
You're ready to make your company run better, grow faster, and make more money. Call 800-465-3800 and meet with your Insperity Business Performance Advisor today. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
This is Money Clip on Bloomberg Television, and we are streaming live everywhere. We're online, we're on your phone and tablet. We're also on Apple TV and Amazon Fire TV. I'm Adam Johnson. Well, the Ebola story is a big topic in Washington today, obviously. The head of the CDC and the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases are both testifying before a congressional panel. The hearing comes as we learn more details about the second healthcare worker infected with that deadly virus. Yesterday, we reported she took a flight 2 days before being diagnosed, and now we know that she actually informed the CDC she might have a slight fever before she boarded the plane, and yet the CDC said, go ahead and fly anyway. You know, you wonder how that can happen. President Obama wonders, too. He canceled his campaign trip to meet with advisors about this plan.
As soon as somebody is diagnosed with Ebola, we want a rapid response team, a SWAT team, essentially from the CDC, to be on the ground as quickly as possible, hopefully within 24 hours, so that they are taking the local hospital step by step through exactly what needs to be done. We are going to have to make sure that we do not lose sight of the importance of the international response to what is taking place in West Africa. I am absolutely confident that we can prevent a serious outbreak of the disease here in the United States. But it becomes more difficult to do so if this epidemic of Ebola rages out of control in West Africa. If it does, then it will spread globally.
As it is doing right now. Some are saying that the president's words are not enough. Ohio Senator Bob Portman and Arizona Senator John McCain have been calling on the president to be more proactive. They actually want an Ebola czar. They are not alone in their complaints.
A more authoritative, unified, national level of oversight and guidance is what's needed if we're going to have a coordinated approach to something as lethal, dangerous, and complicated as Ebola.
I think the president would be super smart all around to pick one person with a commanding presence, have him go on TV and talk daily, maybe twice a day, about what's going on, because politically now he's setting himself up for the same kind of criticism that he's gotten in the past about not being commanding enough, not getting on top of a big issue.
This White House has not kind of designated a Norman Schwarzkopf-like figure, someone who has public health credibility but also has communication skills, political savvy, who's out there on television absolutely every day leading people through this.
So a lot of people calling for action, but who's actually in charge at this point?
People in national security circles talk about having a belly button to push, a person who's important enough to get something done. You push, it happens. Like, say, if we're worried about an Ebola pandemic, we don't have a belly button for that, but we used to. In the late 1990s, Bill Clinton read about tropical viruses like Ebola, which was discovered in the 1970s. He says fear of an outbreak kept him up at night, so he installed on the National Security Council somebody dedicated solely to biodefense, a belly button. 2001, George W. Bush gets rid of the special assistant for biodefense. Then, after the anthrax attacks, he recreates the position and rehires the same guy to fill it. The belly button returns. Then in 2009, Barack Obama reorganizes the National Security Council, gets rid of the special assistant for biodefense, no belly button. Every administration has to relearn the same lesson. This seems like a bureaucratic chair dance, but it has real consequences. Back when there was a guy in charge of biodefense at the White House, every year he made every department run a simulation for pandemic influenza, and he gave out grades. But none of this planning has actually happened since 2009. In 2012, a bill in the House would have recreated that chair in the National Security Council, and it would have created a national biodefense plan. It didn't pass. We still don't have a special assistant to the president for biodefense. Now, we see Tom Friedman on the TV a lot. He's the head of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. But the CDC doesn't do logistics, and it doesn't do medical care. Friedman's job is just to know about the virus. So, for the last 5 years, no one close to the president has had biodefense as a full-time job. There's been no planning, no report cards, no grades. If it seems like we don't know how to deal with the possibility of an Ebola pandemic, it's because, once again, we're making it up as we go.
That was Bloomberg Businessweek, Brendan Greeley. We will hear more from him in a minute, but nobody knows more about how we're improvising this whole thing than Vicky Milazzo. She's a registered nurse and legal nurse consultant.
The big concern among nurses right now is that
they do want more protection. They feel that hospitals are not prepared and that they themselves are not prepared. What I am hearing from nurses that some of the preparation is as little as the CDC guidelines are being posted on a bulletin board. Same. So I think everybody's got to get in on the act here. The CDC, and I think they are starting to realize that they need to be more involved, but the hospitals have to prepare their nurses as well. And it's not just hospitals, it's clinics and other places where these patients are going to be coming and seeking treatment.
All right, back to our Brendan Greeley. He went to Alabama to get firsthand experience with Ebola preparedness for his cover story on the disease and the CDC. It's the latest edition of the magazine, which, by the way, you can read digitally today. He stopped by surveillance this morning to talk about it.
It takes about half an hour to get in and get out. What I thought was interesting was the CDC is running this at a FEMA site in Alabama, but all of the knowledge comes from Doctors Without Borders because they've actually run what they call ETUs, Ebola Treatment Units. So the procedures are, if you look at what the CDC actually has on its website, it's got sort of, there's things you're supposed to put on, two gloves. Doctors Without Borders has you, one, you can't go in unless you have a buddy. You're both suiting up together. You're checking each other. You go in together. If at any moment anybody panics or feels compromised, you both leave together. They have mirrors as part of their procedure so that you can check that you're fitted correctly. And I think significantly, if you look at the CDC's guidelines, they still have skin exposed. When you are getting suited up by Doctors Without Borders, there's absolutely not a centimeter of flesh exposed.
That looks like your Halloween costume. I mean, it's not a joke, that's intense. Yeah.
And by the way, these guys are wearing these suits in intense heat.
It was 60 degrees and I felt uncomfortable.
Really?
And so I can't imagine what that suit is like in 95.
Am I right, Scarlett, that the first nurse that got sick, they believe it was taking off?
So donning is hard enough. Doffing is even harder.
What do you call it?
Doffing. The official word is removal. You doff your gear, right? So you take it off. But it's actually, there's some muscle memory involved because you've got clean surfaces on your hands that you've washed, and you've got to get into the suit and get it off without touching any of the dirty surfaces. Again, what the CDC has done is they've got PDFs on their website, and if you're a hospital, you can go and check it out. But you actually have to learn how to do this. It's a little bit like a sport as well.
Be sure to check out Brendan's article in the newest edition of Bloomberg Business Week. It hits your tablet today, newsstands tomorrow. Well, another challenge facing the United States, keeping the recovery on track. We're going to hear from the head of Fed District Number 8, St. Louis Chief Jim Bullard. We are also going to hear from the president of the EU Commission, his plan for getting it back on track. And something we want to point out, with oil prices hitting a four-year low, Russian President Vladimir Putin may be losing his best friend. That would be high oil prices. It's one of our most popular stories on the website today. You can check it out at Bloomberg.com/popular.
Today.
I'm backing up the computer. Photos, work files, you name it.
Lovely. See you in a few hours. Did you get everything backed up?
Took care of it.
For just $59.99 a year, Carbonite backs up your irreplaceable files automatically, so you don't have to. Try it for free at Carbonite.com.
Today's Bloomberg Ticker is brought to you by Invesco. Explore intentional investing with Invesco. Start with your financial advisor.
Do you love to grill but hate the messy cleanup? Me too. Hi, Mark Gill here for the Miracle Grill Mat. It takes any grill surface and makes it completely non-stick. And it eliminates cleanup. Here's something you could never do at home. I'm going to do breakfast on my barbecue. I'm even going to add an egg. Look at that. And for a special treat, in just a second, a little bit of shredded cheese. Now, you want non-stick? That's non-stick. And I've still got my grill lines. Now, remember that special treat? Watch the egg. right into the cheese, toast, eggs, and cheese on my Miracle Grill mat, and nothing sticks. Are you kidding me? And I never have to clean my barbecue again. Grilled vegetables are amazing, but trying to do them on an open grate is almost impossible. They all just fall through. You lose half your meal. With the Miracle Grill mat, I can grill my vegetables right beside my meat, and I never lose that great barbecue flavor. Flare-ups can ruin your meat, but with the Miracle Grill mat, there's never any flare-up. And burnt-on sausage and marinades make for a cleaning nightmare. But with the Miracle Grill mat, cleanup is a snap. If you've ever tried to grill fish, you know it just flakes and falls apart. But with the Miracle Grill Mat, you get perfect fish every time. Now get your very own Miracle Grill Mat for the low, low price of only $19.95. Every grill mat comes with a 5-year guarantee and is reusable thousands of times. Call or click right now, and we'll give you a second mat free. And the shipping is free. But I'm not stopping there. Call or click right now and get the Miracle Baking Mat free. Cookies slide right out of the pan. Brownies never stick, and cakes fall right out. Yep, you get it all. Two Miracle Grill mats, the Miracle Baking mat, the 5-year guarantee, and free shipping. All for the low, low price of only $19.95. But you gotta call now.
Call 1-800-899-4886. That's 1-800-899-4886. Or go to buymiraclegrillmat.com.
Ross needs an auditor who knows the industry as well as he does. For Brian, it's whether he can call the partner at midnight.
So?
They both came up with the same name, BDO.
Huh.
People who know BDO.
Around the clock, around the world, Bloomberg keeps you connected with breaking news, exclusive interviews, expert insight, and more. On television, at Bloomberg.com, on your iPad or Android tablet, on your radio, on your smartphone, and now on Apple TV. Anytime, anywhere, Bloomberg is wherever you are.
This is Money Clip on Bloomberg Television, and we're streaming live everywhere. We are also on your Windows device, so turn us on. I'm Adam Johnson. All right, it is almost go time for the Fed. U.S. Central Bank is poised to end its unprecedented bond buying program. That's propped up markets and the economy for several years. Recent tremors, though, in the markets and other global economies beg the question whether the Fed should actually stay its course. The closed-door meeting of the group of 30 last weekend in Washington, Fed Chair Janet Yellen said that she has confidence in the durability of the current U.S. expansion. Two people familiar with the comments tell Bloomberg that Yellen said the economy is on track for 3% growth, that inflation will eventually rise back to its 2% target. What that doesn't answer, though, is whether the Fed will end its quantitative easing program as expected later this month. St. Louis Fed Chief James Bullard is one of the Fed members who has been more open to getting out of quantitative easing. Now, he's saying the central bank should think about keeping it going. His words pushed stocks off their lows earlier today. He spoke with our economics editor, Michael McKee, this morning.
It would keep the program alive, and it would keep it keep the optionality for the committee open as to what we want to do going forward. If the economy is still as robust as I'm describing it, then I think we could just end the program in December. But if the market's right and this is portending something more serious for the U.S. economy, then the committee would have an option of ramping up QE at that point. So I've been one that says that the QE program would be open-ended and that we would be able to adjust it in response to macroeconomic developments. This is a serious macroeconomic development. It's primarily coming out of Europe. It's just that Europe was expected to have a good year, and they're not. So growth prospects there are looking bleaker than they were, and the disinflation and even deflation outlook for Europe is not looking good. This is a development that's occurring in Europe, but it's affecting U.S. markets.
Well, you think the U.S. economy is going to be strong, and so are the markets wrong to be selling off the way they are?
Some of the sell-off would make sense because a lot of U.S. multinationals have important fractions of their business outside the U.S., and so if you thought that the global outlook was worse than previously, then it would make sense that some U.S. stocks would be marked down on that basis. So I wouldn't worry about, you know, that part. That part seems to make sense.
As for what the Fed does about interest rates after QE eventually ends, well, that depends on the forecast.
My forecast is for rising inflation. That's why I'm concerned about declining inflation expectations. The five-year TIPS in particular has declined below 1.5%. The five-year forward is down from its previous levels. And, you know, the central bank has to guard against any expectations in market that would suggest that the central bank's not going to hit its inflation target. So you have to be credible on your inflation targets.
Hear more from Mr. Bullard. Just go to our website, Bloomberg.com/TV, or, of course, you can use our mobile app. That would be Bloomberg TV Plus. All right, still ahead, Nobel Prize economist Paul Krugman, his conversation with Charlie Rose. Specifically, he talks about Europe. And Netflix getting absolutely crushed today. What were they thinking anyway, raising prices?
Eric Schatzker. Banking's been his beat for years.
Let's draw one point of contrast.
Stephanie Wu worked Wall Street as an insider on some of the biggest trades.
Another plunge in profits.
Together, they're setting the agenda for your investment day.
It's been getting crushed.
Now, no, but just because it's getting crushed doesn't mean you should sell it.
Telling you the why and what it means for you.
You know what? I can't win this fund.
Can we just sit on that for a moment?
Market Makers. Weekdays, 10 a.m. Eastern. Only on Bloomberg Television.
What does Silicon Valley get that other industries don't yet?
Bloomberg's Emily Chang sits down with the biggest influencers in technology and media.
Honestly, in the beginning, we were not trying to make money.
It was all an experiment. You think that you may live to 120.
I certainly hope to, yes. I'm a little paranoid of not being needed and wanted, I guess.
For candid conversations about how they made it and where they're going next, Studio 1.0, Thursdays at 8:30 on Bloomberg Television.
So you're talking about a show that's kind of like what we did in our books.
Exactly. The high human drama of politics. And politics is fun.
But the show should be about more than politics. About politics and sports and entertainment and culture. The whole thing.
Exactly. It's like a taco bar and a sushi bar all in one.
That sounds pretty good.
I took my first handful of pills, and that's when all my priorities seemed to change.
He would ask to use the bathroom in other people's homes.
He just assumed that they would have medication.
He'd go in their medicine cabinets and steal prescription drugs.
I wish I knew really what these prescription pills were.
We were so naive about the whole drug thing.
These are all synthetic forms of heroin.
Keep your medication locked up because you'll never notice that a pill is gone.
Mind your meds. Learn more from the Partnership for Drug-Free Kids.
Many Americans who have prescriptions fail to stay on them. That's why we created programs which encourage people to take their medications regularly. So join us as we raise a glass to everyone who remembered today. Bottoms up, America. See you tomorrow. Same time. Another innovation from CVS Health. Because health is everything.
Partnerships occur when both share a passion for improving, for growing in harmony. Speak from the heart and respect the other. Feeling of being comfortable, of being open, that creates the true partnership, which ensures the greatest success. Together, invest in remarkable Indonesia.
I am so glad that Jen set us up.
Yeah.
So how do you guys know each other?
Jen and I went to summer camp together.
Oh, that's cute. Yeah.
You know, I never lost a Maccabi.
Oh, whoa.
I know,
watch
right?
out. What's Maccabi?
so bad. I am tired.
You know, I never lost at Maccabi.
Color Wars?
You know what that is?
Yeah, we call it Maccabi too.
Do you want to go out and grab a drink?
Yes. Do you want to meet my parents?
Tell us your budget and the Name Your Price tool helps you find a whole range of coverages. No one else gives you options like that.
No one at all.
No one at all.
No one.
Wake up.
Oh. You okay, buddy?
I just had a dream that Progressive had this thing called...
Your budget and the Name Your Price tool helps you find a whole...
It isn't a dream, is it?
Nope.
Sorry.
You know that thing freaks me out.
He can hear you. He didn't mean that.